Fuck you, Blockbuster.
You still paying bills?
No, Blockbuster sent me an email telling me that the new Twilight series Breaking Dawn came out. Huh. And it's telling me, oh, you might be into, like...
It knows.
Like, Blockbuster, what, you trying to call me gay? You trying to call me gay?
Blockbuster? That email was tailor-made for you. Okay, gentlemen and ladies, welcome to Off Color, Episode 8. Yes, that's Infinity snowed on its head. This is Chris. I like playing EDH, and I'm a butt. Oh, yes, Off Color is a commander-centric podcast that tries to focus on the serious, the aggressive, and the awesome. And I've got two lovely dudes with me. How about you say hi to the folks at home, Calvin?
Hey, everybody, it's Calvin, also known as Captain Resin around the Internet. You're listening to episode 8, of course. You know, that's where we are in as far as shows are concerned. Sit back, relax, and currently I'm trying to hide a giant erection.
Okay. And trying to squirm and just narrowly avoid Calvin's erection, we have Cassidy on the other side. How about you say hi, Cassidy?
Yeah, the narrowly is the part that I worry about. Hi everyone, this is Cassidy. You can check out my articles over at tcgplayer.com in the magic section every Thursday. All this month I've been talking about, Dark Ascension and, the Innistrad Generals I did back then, kind of updating them and having fun and, putting together new combos and, also broke the Haven Goal Lich recently. That was fun. Also, we will be doing a Commander Cast episode next week. And I'm sure we'll be showing up in the future on that, so I just wanted to mention that so everyone can be ready for Off Color to take over CommanderCast.
Yeah, I was thinking we should cut some promos, but then I never got around to talking about it.
Yeah, but we just did, so.
Yep.
Yeah, CommanderCast.com.
Well, 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 if it isn't time for Chris's stupid card thing, here on Off Color.
Okay, beautiful people, we're at my stupid card thing, and we're going to talk about what used to be my favorite card in Magic. It's still in my top five. It's a black creature, four black to cast, a 7/7 flying trample, and this is our boy Lord of the Pit. He's got a little more text here for us. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature other than Lord of the Pit. If you can't, Lord of the Pit deals 7 damage to you. So they've brought this guy back in a couple weirdo ways in later sets, but how about we just talk about the vanilla one at first? Cassidy, what's your opinion on El Lord?
I've never been a huge fan of him. I'm not into black for their big creatures, really. And also, this guy, it's always seemed like it could be super vulnerable because your opponent can basically kill all the creatures but him and then just laugh. Personally, like, I've never been a big fan. He's been around for a really long time. And back in the day, I don't even think I really had access to him. I think he was slightly out of my price, either that or I just never tried hard. But, I'm not a huge fan of Lord of the Pit. There's a few other ones that we're going to talk about that I like a little bit better than this guy.
Calvin, what do you think of our boy?
With Lord of the Pit, I've ran him a few times in the past.
Hell yeah.
One of the things I've actually liked about him was the fact that he is like a 7/7 flyer. The trample never really seemed to ever mean anything because, something that big in the air never really needs to trample over anything. But one of the other things I've actually really liked about him is how he works with, like, token producers. One of the cards I actually like combining with Lord of the Pit is obviously Breeding Pit because it's three colorless, one black enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Breeding Pit unless you pay 2 black. At the beginning of your end step, you put a 0/1 black Thrall creature token onto the battlefield. And I've always found it to be pretty interesting to play around with Lord of the Pit because you can always, like, just pay the 2 black, you get the little 0/1, and Lord of the Pit has something to snack on at the beginning of your next turn without actually needing to take away from something else important, like one of your other creatures or one of your other demons, maybe. And it, playing two mana a turn to keep a 7/7 flying trampler is not too bad.
Yeah, there's worse upkeeps. I like the two of those guys together too. And apparently Wizards does as well, because they both managed to be on the demonic side of the dual deck. Divine versus demonic, for those of you keeping score at home. I'll admit he's been outclassed by even black beaters these days, but Lord of the Pit's also seen, while he's gotten reprinted a lot, he's also seen some weird alterations to him. We're going to jump into a couple of those. I'll just read these off for you. We probably won't talk about this one too much, but first we're going to go with Liege of the Pit, which was 5 black, black, black. Pretty much all the same other stuff, except he could also be played. He had morph cost of 4 black. So you could play him as a gray ogre and then morph him for 4 black, saving you 2 mana in the process. And if you wanted to skip an upkeep where you didn't want him just, you know, hurting you and snacking on your dudes, you had that going for you. A little later in M10, they actually printed a strictly better Lord of the Pit called Zathrid Demon. He's 3 black, 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 and then, well, I guess not strictly better, because if you don't sack a dude, he actually taps and then hurts you for 7, as opposed to the other ones where if you didn't sack a guy, you could still attack with Lord of the Pit, or Liege of the Pit, for that matter. So Zathrid Demon, you lose 1 converted mana cost to tap if we don't sack a guy to you. So that could actually matter.
Yeah, I like that guy the least, I think. Yeah. I have to say, also the art, I don't know. A lot of cards from M10 kind of look ugly to me for some reason. Like, whenever I see them, it's just like, what were they thinking when they put this art on a card? Yeah, so Zathrid Demon also has the name going for it. Like, so overall, this is definitely the worst demon we're talking about here. I hate this guy.
Wayne Reynolds, you're on notice.
But one thing I would have to say about the art for Zathrid Demon is that it does look like he's fly-kicking the shit out of somebody.
Yeah, that's true.
But it looks like he, like, just kicked somebody completely out the scene.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, like Liu Kang style. I thought he was going towards the left, but you're right. If his momentum is going towards the right, that's pretty badass.
So he has, like, a very tiny face, though.
No, that's because his face just looks tiny because you're getting a face full of boot, so it's like, you know, perspective.
Oh, okay.
You're not seeing the face because the boot is coming to your mouth too fast.
But okay. I think the one that we might actually discuss a little bit here is the new guy out of Dark Ascension. He's only half Lord of the Pit, though, really, because on the front half, he's Ravenous Demon, 3 black, black, 4/4/4. That ain't too bad. Sack a human, transform Ravenous Demon. Activate this ability only any time you can cast a sorcery. So you're not going to be able to combat trick sack a human to flip him. On the other side, though, we've got Orc Demon of Greed, which is a 9/9 flying trample. At the beginning of your upkeep, sack a human. If you can't, tap Arc Demon of Greed, and it deals 9 damage to you. I like this guy a lot. When I first read him in the spoiler, I'm like, awesome. What do you guys feel on him?
Well, one of the things I actually find interesting about Ravenous Demon, Arc Demon of Greed, whichever side you're talking about, is the thing I find interesting about this particular card is it has 2 ways to basically be played. You can play him as a 4/4/5, which is, you know, pretty fine in black. I mean, you know, size is mostly, like, outside of black's territory without some type of significant cost.
Okay.
Why do I have a strange feeling you're thinking of penis?
I don't want to be thinking of penis.
All right.
But, yeah. But one of the good things I actually find about him is, like, you know, the whole sacrifice of human clause is kind of steep. I mean, you do have to actually basically play a deck that has human tokens or humans you're willing to get rid of to be able to use this particular card effectively. But in the same token, like, if you just play him as the front side, you don't really lose out anything. There's no real downside, no real drawback to having him. And it's, you know, a 4/4 beater, which is one of the reasons why I think that we were just discussing how this card has 2 different ratings on the Gatherer. And I think that the reason that it has 2 different ratings on the Gatherer is because, like, on the front side, you know, he's a 4/4. You know, you can't really argue with that too bad. I mean, 4/4/5 isn't too horrible. And the backside, yeah, you get the pumped up version of a Lord of the Pit with the 9-9. But, you know, the backside, in my opinion, is a little bit worse because you have to actually keep a human around or he's just going to eat, or he's just going to start eating you instead of them.
Wait, what? You're saying the Archdemon's the worst side?
Well, in my opinion, I would think so.
That's just cray.
But the reason I would say it is because, like, hey, like I'm saying, the reason I think that the Archdemon is the worst side of it is because, right, on the front side, sacrificing a human is optional. You know? You could easily play this in a deck that doesn't have a single human in it, and you still have a 4-4 for 5. But on the other side, it's not like the other Lord of the Pit where you could just sacrifice any creature. It has to be a human. And in black, it's usually vampires, zombies, demons, imps, various, like, sometimes goblins. But, you know, you rarely get good black humans. And there's not really any human token generators in black. They're all in white at the moment that I know of. So it's like you literally have to play a card to keep the other side flipped. Without him turning around and just smashing your own face for 9. But, you know, that's basically my opinion about why the two sides would have different ratings.
Well, first off, like we've been talking about, this guy is totally taking a dump. And he's pissed off that you've interrupted him, which makes sense. So the big thing, though, is, like, black humans. You're right. There aren't too many of them, and there aren't too many that actually you can get too much value from sacrificing. But there are a few good ones anyways. For instance, Dark Confidant is a human, so maybe if the Dark Confidant's overused his welcome, you know, as he's causing you damage or whatever, you know, you can just have him die to the Ravenous Demon and flip him into the big guy. Problem is that once he's big, you're going to need a way to get back that human. So basically we're looking at stuff that's more like white decks. You know, unfortunately, even, like, old soldier tokens aren't white, you know. You would assume that a soldier token would be, like, a white soldier from, like, a Kaldoran outpost or something. And it's only been real recently that we have human tokens from the new guy, Thraven Doomsayer, I believe. So he actually, this Thraven Doomsayer actually makes just human tokens. They're not any sort of class, you know, they're just the human. So I think that him combined with the Archdemon Agreed / Ravenous Demon would probably be the best bet to go. Because, you know, we can't use things like Breeding Pit because that's like a troll token. And, you know, even something like Bitter Blossom that makes fairies, so that won't feed the Archdemon at all. So, I really don't think that the Archdemon is all that much better than the rest of the class because the 9-9 over the 7-7 isn't that great. And, much like the Zathrid Demon, he'll tap if you don't pay him.
So what you want to do is you want to be an Esper. You want to be down to 10 life. You got the Zathrid Demon out. You have whatever that blue enchantment is that makes you have 2 upkeeps.
But Paradox Haze, you mean?
Okay. So you give yourself Paradox Haze. And then you do near-death experience. Bam, you won the game. No one's going to break that up. I was gonna put Sorn in there so you could get yourself to 10 life, but Sorn's an opponent. So you'd have to mindslaver somebody else with a Sorn to have them ding you to 10.
Oh, I see where you're going with that.
Oh, you can Magus the Sphinx yourself, though, in Esper colors.
Ooh, yeah.
So that's the deck we're planning on here. Is
yes.
Magister Sphinx into Demon into Finest Hour. Or what was it called? Not Finest Hour.
Near-death experience.
Yeah,
that's actually another one of something I might want to talk about in stupid cards sometimes, because it's just, there's an allure to that card that would just, you'd have to really be living the dream.
Don't go towards the light! Don't take that one damage!
Man, getting in would be tougher if you didn't fight with, like, a whip.
What? Real quick, yeah. What's the name of that enchantment that, you name a creature type, and all creatures are that type?
Oh, there's a Xenograph, right? Something?
Conspiracy?
Conspiracy works too.
Conspiracy. That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
There we go.
Conspiracy. Yeah, because then you can conspiracy and make them all humans.
Hmm.
Yeah. I admit that even as much as I love, the Archdemon, I do kind of balk at having to have him be such a build around me card.
Yeah. You see, the thing is, like, he's not a legendary creature, so it's bad enough that he's not legendary. So he's in your deck, and your deck is built around another card that you may not get to draw. So you'd have to use, like, black tutors to find stuff to make all your tokens humans. Then you gotta use another tutor to find him, just so he's valid now. But then, like, if something happens and he's gone, now all that stuff you were doing to create, make your thralls into humans and whatever is just kind of pointless.
And admittedly, he's only even really the second best demon that they printed in this set, because we've got our boy Withengar, too, who I would much rather see on the field every time.
Yeah, and Bloodgift Demon was also from the last set, and we also have the freaking Runescar Demon, which is probably one of the better cards ever printed, if not, you know what I mean? So, yeah, when you can just cast the Runescar Demon for a little bit less, and he doesn't have Trample, but as we mentioned, like, how important is that on a flyer? Not at all. So I just would play Runescar Demon over all these pansies, honestly. That's just my thing.
Okay, so we're gonna talk about just the OG then, though, for our rating here. Lord of the Pit, thumbs up or thumbs down? I kinda have some trepidation even asking this, cause I'm pretty sure I'm gonna have two pointing right down at me. Cassidy, go ahead.
Yeah, thumbs down on Lord of the Pit. Not a big fan, never have been a big fan. Maybe if he didn't deal so much damage to you, if you don't feed him, that'd be great. Or if he just killed himself if he didn't feed him, I'd be happier with that. But I don't want to die to my own creature. Especially a big, stupid guy like that. No.
Calvester?
Well, me personally, if we're talking just Lord of the Pit, I would have to actually say thumbs up on this one.
Oh, yeah.
Mainly because he doesn't tap himself. I mean, granted, you do take the 7 damage, but, you know, at least you can still be able to deal another 7 out evenly. The upkeep is kind of difficult to deal with, but like I said, like if you can get some decent token generators into the deck, if you can find a way to feed him, feed. Like the human centipede, just feed him. He'll be fine.
Alright, so we have a contested war zone here when it comes to discussing it. I of course love it. If you've got your own little opinions, love stories, history about maybe you slept with Lord of the Pit one time, go ahead and just email us at offcolorcast@gmail.com. We'll be sure to get back to you.
And now it's time for Cassidy's audacity. He doesn't follow the rules. Off color.
Okay, so this week for Cassidy's audacity, I wanted to talk about something that's beyond the rules, of course, and this is card alters. Now, in EDH, we don't have much of an issue because we don't really mind. You know, most people can get away with using proxies, so however the alter is, that's fine. But I've heard that in Standard and things like that, if the card is too altered, you can't actually use it. So that's how I'm going to base this on outside of the rules. I recently won the Commander Cast contest about alters, and I cheated, apparently. That's fine, I don't care. Anyways, I you know, this is all about cheating, so calling
the
me a cheater.
The rules don't really apply to Cassidy, so.
Yeah.
I am beyond the rules, or as Triple H used to say, screw the rules! So, I did grow up on Triple H, so I blame it on him. Anyways, I really don't know what to, like, I have a few ideas, but I'm not really sure what to tell them to do. I'm tempted halfway to just donate it, but at the same time, I'm not a very good person, so I don't know if I'd do that. my idea was that I kind of wanted to get Omnath looking like a punk rocker with a mohawk and, you know, leather and tattoos and stuff. I really don't know if that would actually work out, just based on the card. He's kind of, like, smaller and coming from the front. Maybe Durfington could pull it off, I don't know. Like, I really want to do my Omnath, but I don't want to just get another full art Omnath, because there's already, like, 7 or 8 out there, and that seems kind of boring. And I was also thinking about maybe looking up kind of like Wrestler, like I have on my website. But I've actually wanted to be changing it to a punk rock Omnath for a while, and I've tried to draw it in, like, Photoshop and stuff, but I just suck so much that it always looks like total ass. So I'm hoping that maybe Durfington has some ideas, but that's my first idea for an altar. I really want to do something with Omnat just because I talk about him enough and I play him enough. What about you, Calvin? What's your big altar dream?
There's actually two cards that I'm just thinking about altering, but I'll tackle the first one now. One of the things I kind of wanted to alter was Jace's Ingenuity. Because every time I look at this card, I want to get like a full art version with the text box removed. And underneath, I want it to look like he's sitting on a toilet. Because every time I look at the art on this card, the first thing that comes to my mind is like, that's brilliant. Me personally, a little something about myself is one of the best places I get most of my thinking done is on the crapper. And I could just imagine like Jace going to the bathroom, sitting there thinking, contemplating. And then out of nowhere, like a stroke of genius hits him like, oh, that's brilliant. Draw three cards.
You had to go stroke of genius.
Yeah, I mean. The art in Jace's Ingenuity does look like me after I've had a stroke of genius. Or maybe like 100 of them.
Sorry, Calvin. You used stroke of genius. Alright, go ahead.
As you were saying?
Well, yeah, this is one of the cards that if I had a chance to alter it, I'd want to get like a playset altered just so I could like have four Jace's taking a shit and in my graveyard. It's weird. We're talking about a lot of bathroom etiquette right now today, so it's just one of the things that came to mind.
Would you put anything above it? Would you make it look more homely? Like maybe put like a window or like a sink kind of by him? Because there's a lot of room like up in the top where like just kind of light, I guess, you know?
Maybe if I were going to put something up there, I'd probably have like each one altered like slightly different because I'd want a playset of it. And, like, one of them would probably have it, like, this way, like, I could play them in order. Like, the first one, I have, like, a little, like, comical bubble up there with him, like, screaming out, I got it. And then, like, the second one would be, like, I can't believe I didn't think of this before. Then, like, eventually, like, I'd get to one to be, like, oh, now, like, yes, draw three cards.
Yeah, that's a perfect spot for a speech bubble or a thought bubble. That's awesome. Good call. What about you, Christian? What's your first altered dream?
First of all, I think you should get Zedru altered with just a big old fucking rag.
No.
Dude, come on.
If anything, I would get it altered, Zedru altered to look like it's a political, like, you know, like she's got like a yard signs and like vote Zedru in 2011.
Like I thought Minotaurs was tough and whatnot. Actually, shouldn't she have six tits?
I've never thought about it, but Zedru should totally have six tits.
Alright,
that's the altar right there.
The altar I want the most is a preacher with me without a shirt on it. And actually, I sent that, tweeted that to Durfington, and then I decided it would look better if I wore my sweet blue suit jacket. So I took a couple pictures and sent that over to him, and he's actually working. He might actually get started to work on, I don't know even if I really even want the car. I just want the picture. So I think that's what I'm having him make.
Yeah, you have a picture of it in the Skype window here, and it looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, I basically, okay, here's the tweet I sent to Durfington about this altar. The first thing, you know, I've probably sent like two things to him before this, and it was, hey, pretty lady, how much do your altars usually go for? Say I want a preacher, but with me not wearing a shirt at the pulpit. That was my way of asking for altered art.
But you should have him, like, alter the text box. And just take the text out of it and just make it, like, all flavor text.
Or he could cut it out so that you're standing there with your Superman underwear underneath.
This is when you guys should be happy that you can only hear us and not see things. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, once it gets made, you know, I mean.
So what other altars did you have in mind there, Castay?
The other thing I kind of wanted to do was, like, a guy's cradle with a bunch of green dudes on it. like just more action and happening, maybe even like a party or just kind of all the creatures that I like to play with in my decks, like a Terastodon, and then there's, you know, Seedborn Muse in front of it or whatever, Raphelos, who is like, and if you look at the Raphelos art, he actually looks like he's hanging out, like talking to people, but he's by himself in the art. Like there's plenty of room for Raphelos to like be doing something else, but he's, you know, he's like,
he's like, hey guys, oh wait, am I alone again?
So that was kind of my idea, but the one thing is that a guy's cradle is a lot of money, so like asking Durfington or anyone to alter one, or possibly risking my own, like seems like a big deal, you know.
Well, although, you have them alter a gold border.
Well, I did just find a few gold borders online finally, so that should be coming in the mail pretty soon. I'm pretty happy.
Got any others that you got a big altered hard on for, Calvin?
Well, one of the other cards that I think would make for a pretty good alter, or even, you know, just to see, would be Go for the Throat. Because every time I see that, I keep thinking of, like, Innistrad now. And with Innistrad, when it's horror theme and, you know, all the scary creatures and monsters, one of the things that comes to my mind is this play called Sweeney Todd, the Butcher of something or other. I forget.
It's the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, I think, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I just remember the movie. It's just like Sweeney Todd and it had fucking... Damn, I'm like...
Johnny Depp?
There we go.
My man, Johnny Depp? Yep. That was a kind of hard to watch, though, because it was a really obnoxious musical. But, totally, go ahead.
But the thing is, like, you know, I would actually like to see, like, an altered version of, like, a Go for the Throat with a guy sitting in a barber's chair and, like, Sweeney Todd sitting behind with, like, a razor getting ready to shave his beard, but you, like, see him going for the neck.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I've got a couple others that I'd like to see altered, but that's because I'm a hater. And I just want these cards to not have the art that they do. First off, Word of Command. That Word of Command's art is just garbage. But that's back when they could get away with making cards for the dark and not caring what they look like.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. That's like that's barely art at all.
There's somewhere around these days, just for Mere Fours is still laughing all the way to the card bank.
Yeah, right.
And to further my own dislike of Foglio art, I'd like to see Ramirez de Pietro altered, because that's the one Foglio legend that exists.
Oh, come on. That's pretty awesome.
It's better than a lot of the other Foglio cards, but I'm still... I want new art for that. It's not even like, I don't even know that I'd run Ramirez ever, because anytime you see him out there, it's usually just because they want to run blue-black.
Well, he's a human pirate, too, don't forget, so.
Oh, that's true. That does count for something.
I would probably run him in, like, a Sig deck, just because I would love to run pirates, ninjas, and thieves and stuff.
Well, as far as the pirate legend guy goes, I've actually made a deck around him one time. And posted it up on my blog. There was like a pirate theme deck, and basically it was him battling with Skeleton Ship for like lead as the commander. Because I kept trying to think, like, you know, if this was a theme deck, what would I actually be the commander here? Would it actually be the pirate captain, or would it be the ship where the pirates are on?
Oh shit, I lied. They also did, his wife did Orym. So we gotta alter Orym too.
Oh, that's horrible. But, Chris.
Yo.
Question. If you were to get Word of Command altered in that weird ass black text box, what would you get there?
Like, the easiest thing to do would probably just put Vader there. Darth Vader, not the wrestler. Actually, I wouldn't mind having the wrestling Vader on there either. I don't know, I just want some pretty real dude. When it comes to customization lately, I'm kind of a bad person to ask, because I just got that Soul Calibur game that came out, And you can make fighters, but one of the helmets is a horse's head. So I've been just making dudes with horses' heads.
As I look at Word of Command, the one thing that comes to my mind is, like, there should be, like, a giant grin on that.
It looks like those are ladies' eyes.
Yeah, but it looked like it should have, like, a Cheshire Cat-like grin.
Yeah, I can almost get like behind, lots get of behind teeth. That.
And the teeth should be, like, just up there, like, past the eyes.
Ooh. I know, I want Mr. Gone from the Max on there. For, like, the three or four people that got that.
Well, listeners have access to the internet. They can always go Google it.
Remember, it's two X's, M-A-X-X.
Oh, I miss that show. That was so good.
It was a good comic, too. It was almost exactly the same as the show, though. Well, I mean, like, the show was exactly the same as the comic.
Right. So we've talked a little bit about cards that we wanted to see altered for various reasons. Mine were much less creative than my compatriots here. And also, we've talked about cards that just need to be altered because they're ugly and we need to do humanity a favor. Go ahead.
Actually, that makes... I guess we could talk about our own stances on alters. if they aren't just all, we like them all.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I love alters. Even shitty alters are kind of fun. Although I see there's a lot of cards that are like graffitied on from, you know, like bicolor or anti and stuff like that, and that's not quite as fun.
What do you think, Calvin? What's your stance on alters?
Well, I have no real problem with alters themselves as long as it comes out good, because I'm really into artwork myself, and if it's a picture where I can actually look at it and kind of understand what's going on in the photo, I'm great. And as far as other, like, personal alters, I have no problem with, like, well, you know, to plug Commander Cast again, how Andy has, like, his black Sharpie alters. And he, like, just, like, you take the card and you just kind of, like, take a black marker and just add stuff to it. Like that one where you have the demon playing the guitar.
Yeah, the Sharpie alters are a pretty big thing. I like them. I kind of, the same way with full art cards, though. If you have a full art alter, I'd hope it's on a card I can know, remember what it is.
Yeah. Well,
the last thing you want to do is be like a full alter on something that has like a brick of text.
Well, actually, when it comes to the alters, if you want to play them in a deck, you probably don't want it to be like a regular card because shuffling is going to damage it. So I think that in Commander, you're probably just better off going with altering up your general, maybe. That, you know, cause you don't have to shuffle your general too often. It's pretty easy to have like a replacement, you know. I got my brother that Feldergriff, alter that Durfington did. And, you know, he plays that as his general and then he'll have the normal one to the side if anyone wants to read it or if it gets shuffled into his deck or something. So that's something to kind of think about when it comes to alters too, is that, you may damage them when you're shuffling them, especially if you shuffle rather hard, or even if you're just playing a lot of games, you might not remember it's in there, and you might do a lot of damage to, like, whatever, you know, acrylic or whatever they use.
Mm. Oh, speaking of alters, my, one last shout-out thing, but the kid who was living here for a while got Liliana the Veil altered as Storm from the X-Men.
Oh, sweet.
And it's a pretty baller. There's actually the girl who did it was doing them was actually made a video of her doing it. So it's pretty cool. I'll post that up here. Kids can look at it in the show notes if they want. Also, of course, we've been sucking Durfington's dick the entire time. There's a good reason for that. He's pretty good. So, yeah, check his stuff out. Buy his shit.
There was actually someone who did a Snapcaster Mage to look like Mickey Mouse from Fantasia. And that was pretty sweet. And that's where it came up, the whole, like, ruling thing, because it was so painted over to look like, you know, like, the cosmos and stuff, and Mickey and stuff, that, like, the guy that owns the shop that was a judge, he's like, well, you couldn't play it in standard, though, because the only thing that actually makes it look like a Snapcaster Mage is the title and the casting cost. Yeah.
Since we are on the topic of alters, I'm pretty sure this might not have anything to do with it.
How do you guys feel about
which McCarlo, like, 3D altered? Like, we'd, like, take, like, six copies of, like, a card, cut up, like, four or five copies to kind of make it look like cards coming out of its own frame.
Yeah, those are pretty cool. You can't really play with them, but you might as well do that for the general, I guess, you know.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it.
I've also seen those like life counters that are made out of cards. I thought those were professionally done, but no, it turns out you're just taking a bunch of like lands in between and stuff like that and shaping it up. So there's actually a lot of cool different ways you can do alters. And, you know, like we mentioned, since they're tough to shuffle, you know, why not get a 3D alter of your general? Cause, you know, you don't want to put that in the deck anyways.
Yeah. Just have a copy when you get spell crumpled and you'll be fine.
Right. Exactly.
Anytime that someone does a full art and I, like, part of my brain just thinks it would be so difficult getting the colors to look right. And then the other part is, like, they're probably not trying as hard as you think they are.
Oh, you know what? There's one kind of altar that does suck. Those ones where people draw Japanese girls on them. Like, take an island.
Oh, the freaking Andamu Islands that try to sell for, like, a buck a piece.
Yeah, exactly. Like yeah, that
those
kind
are,
of...
Those are dog shit. you can find a lot of dog shit altars on eBay.
Yeah, so there's not all altars are awesome. I talked about graffiti, and then there's also I don't know who the target audience is for that. Would boys be interested in that? Young boys? Like, I don't understand.
I think Calvin Russell is the entire market for those.
Calvin, yeah, when you play Calvin, he's got all the anime.
He's got all the anime girl lands.
With the anime
no, I usually have the anime girls on my tokens. Like, literally, what was it? My brother has, like, these, 3 beast tokens. And they're altered to look like this, chick with her, like, ass hanging out. So, like, when you look at it, like, every time he, like, plays, like, the token, I look at it, like, you know that I can't block that, right? like, because in all honesty, if someone was coming at me dressed like that, I'd be like, I'm taking it. I just take that.
Take it. I actually just use raw deal wrestlers for my tokens. So if you play against me, you'll definitely see Hulk Hogan as my beast token. Jeff Hardy as my, like, spirit tokens or something. I don't know.
I don't think I'd want Jeff Hardy on my side.
I did that at a big PTQ. I used those tokens, and my opponents were kind of like, Well, Raven was the death-touching worm, and Hulk Hogan was the life-linking worm.
Yeah. That's actually pretty awesome.
Which one was here harder than that?
Okay, everybody. This is your boy Calvin coming back at you once again this week, and we're headed right back into the red zone. The wet.
I swear, I'm not going to use rifle burrs as the intro for this one.
Dude, I have that song so stuck in my fucking head; it's ridiculous.
I did it again for episode 6. I'm like, I can't stop. Got to put it on.
I take off my shirt to do dishes, and it doesn't go out of my head for hours.
Okay, everybody, this is Calvin coming back at you once again, and this time we're headed right back into the red zone. This week we're going to be going into the A section of Crave. Now, we've already talked about creatures. We've already talked about your recon. Now it's time to talk about your personal preparation for battle, and that is your artillery. What is your artillery, you may be asking? Well, artillery is the stuff that you currently have on the board that's not a creature. Artillery is the stuff that you currently have in your hand that could potentially help you survive a battle phase. This is where, in other formats, you probably get a card like a giant growth effect. I'm pretty sure you're not going to be using that too much in Commander because, you know, +3 to 1 dude, really, that's the best you've got. I mean, you know, maybe if you're playing Popper or something like that, you could work around it, but there's no real need for all of that. So, with artillery, one of the main things that you have to remember is that now that you've surveyed the board, you've determined where things are, and you already know that you're going to want to try to attack this turn. You look into your artillery hand, and you think about, do I have a removal spell? Do I have an enchantment out that might actually be able to help assist creatures? This is like the Glorious Anthems and your Honor of the Pures. This is where your Doom Blades potentially come in. One of the other things that could help with your artillery is maybe even a Planeswalker. Do you have something that might make your opponent sacrifice a creature, or maybe a Jace that might bounce something away? One of the best things about this particular section is this is when you have the chance to see if you have control enough over the board to be able to actually get a successful attack in. So, one of the things that I personally like to think about when I'm getting into artillery is enchantments. Several enchantments actually have abilities where creatures come in, they blow up stuff. Or enchantments where, kind of like the Anthem of Rakdos that we talked about on the previous episode, that could potentially pump your creature if they do swing and attack. Now, granted, like I've said before, chances are you aren't going to see me playing around with that card too much unless I'm playing in a tricolor deck. But it is and does serve a purpose. It is a purpose.
Does your freaking cheating ass Acroma's Memorial count as artillery?
Yeah, it would count as an artillery. Because Acroma's Memorial would count as an artillery. Because, one, it's helping you. It's designed to basically get your dudes into a position where they can do various things and actually save your ass. Acroma's Memorial is actually one of my favorite point pieces of artillery because it's out there and it gives several things that you usually have to invest 3 or 4 cards into to be able to pull off. With protection and flying and vigilance, first strike. I mean, the damn thing has everything, and there's a reason it costs 7 mana. So, Cassidy, is there any particular artifacts or onboard enchantments that you like to play around with on a frequent basis?
First, I just want to mention that we mentioned the Acroma's Memorial because we played a game of Cockatrice the other day, and once Calvin played Acroma's Memorial, it was pretty much over. So anyways, I think my favorite onboard type of removal is stuff like Aura Shards, maybe. You know, that'll clear out other people's enchantments that might be protecting their creatures, or it can destroy artifact creatures, which can be blockers. Attrition kind of is a similar thing. Basically, they're both cards I use in Gob, my Gob deck. Glare of Subdual is an amazing card, amazing artillery card to use your, like, small tokens or whatever, you know, creatures that won't be able to do damage to tap down other blockers. You know, because everyone knows tapped creatures can't block. So that's my kind of, like, initial thoughts about onboard removal. Also, you know, we mentioned it last week, the Predator Flagship. Or not last week, I'm sorry. We mentioned this when we talked about removal. Predator Flagship is a really great refutable removal. And also, you know, since we're including things like Acroma's Memorial into artillery, that'll give your guys flying, kind of like Acroma's Memorial will, for pretty cheap cost and repeatable. So I think that that's actually an excellent piece of artillery. What about you, Christian? What do you think?
Well, I was going to say attrition because it's black and I love it, but somebody said that already.
My bad,
Yeah, it's okay. Somehow I'll survive. I've always enjoyed Rod of Ruin as a onboard creature removal, as long as they only have one toughness and you got 4 mana. as far as just artillery, if I'm going to be a man, I'm going to have my Eldrazi Monument out. Which, when paired with Acroma's Memorial, makes things even more ridiculous.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, Eldrazi Monument is just ridiculous, though, in general. If you're running an artifact deck, Darksteel Forge is just about as ridiculous.
Yeah, with Eldrazi Monument, like, I tried it for a long time, but I never seemed to be able to get it to work, so I just kind of traded mine off.
Getting the critical mass of creatures that you kind of need can, Calvin, how about you talk about some more artillery?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in recent years, now seeing as that we're going to move back, well, I'm still going to stick on to the permanents on board for the moment. And in recent years, Wizards has started printing out a particular type of card that works great with artillery. And it's equipment. It's one of the best things that they've actually come up with. In my personal opinion, it's nice to know that you actually have a way to look at the board and say, you know what, I think this creature deserves to get +1/+1 for each creature I control. I'd be willing to pay 4 mana to give a creature something like that. Or something along the lines of the various swords that we've talked about previously. Even certain equipments that let your creature untap and do various things, because it gives you extra things to do with your mana that don't cost you more cards out of your hand. And the less cards you have to use out of your hand means the more options you have to actually be able to play around with your artillery. other things that fall into permanence on board that have good artillery or other creatures that have abilities, like something along the lines of a steamed catapult, where you could just tap it and destroy a target tapped creature. Like, you know, say an opponent attacks somebody with something that you don't want to be attacked with. You could knock it out the way now. Another form of permanent, like we've discussed, are the various planeswalkers, like Jace the Mind Sculptor and the new Liliana. Maybe even Sandra, if your opponent is playing with a bunch of small creatures and you can find a way to just ping them all off. Onboard, permanents basically make great artillery cards. They're, if you're not playing around with something that can actually do this, then you'd be better off playing some type of control. And if you're playing control, chances are you aren't really trying to attack. You're trying to find some other means of defeating your opponents. So let's switch from the permanents for the moment, and let's go to cards in hand. Now, other forms of good artilleries that could be in your hand are instances, because they're cards where you have the option to be able to decide when something needs to go away. Granted, yes, you could Doomblade a creature during your main phase, and you could potentially go right ahead and, I don't know, let's say use a Gliss of Scorn to destroy a target artifact that's giving you problems, like an Acromas Memorial. But you have the option to swing and then decide later whether or not it's worth taking out. Christian, do you have any particular good instances that you like to throw around while you're heading out into the battlefield?
Trying to think if there's any I didn't mention in episode 2 when we were talking about your favorite removal spells. It's in your favorite color blue, but it's my boy Gigadrowz. Dropping them blue manas to be tapping them guys. I'm a big fan of that. Playing replicate spells online, though, usually means that you've probably put this, you've replicated it 10 times, and 9 of those times you've accidentally picked the same target. So it doesn't have that going against it online, but for the most part, I'm a big fan of Gigadrowz, because it gets what you need done.
Okay, so I'm going to go with cards like Beast Within, Putrefy, Mortify, and then also Ponderify, just because we're going with the if-I here. Basically, what you can do with these cards is you can play them before, you know, blockers have been declared, to cut down a big creature, maybe even turn, like, something, you know, like those demons we were mentioning earlier into a little monkey. Also, Beast Within kind of works in the same way, but you can use the Beast Within to destroy something like the Acromas Memorial. You know, we were talking about it would be good to destroy that early. But we can destroy as a surprise after blocks have been declared. You know, because it may be the case that the protection from black and red was the only reason that some of the blocks were made. So destroying it at instant speed and turning it into a 3-3 beast that can't block because blockers have already been declared, you know, that would make it so, you know, the damage goes through the protection, maybe the first strike also that it gives you. Mortify and Putrefy are good in similar ways. You know, Mortify destroys an enchantment, so you can destroy something like Finest Hour instead. And the fact that you have different targets and that they can, different possible targets and that they can target creatures as well if you need, make them very versatile, instant speed artillery.
Now that we've gone over a few of the instances and a few other onboard permanents, we're gonna switch it over to other cards that are pretty good in this particular situation, which are sorceries. Now, granted, sorceries might not be as good in certain situations as an instant, but sorceries have a tendency to have more power to them, because, you know, you have to cast them during your turn, therefore, since they're slower, wizards has a tendency to make sorceries a little bit better than what they would be if they were an instant. A few good other pieces of artillery for this is, if you're planning on attacking an opponent and you think he might have a battle trick, would be something along the lines of, say, a Mind Stab. That way you can make your opponent try to discard 3 or 4 more cards to get out their hands. Other things that are sorcery speed that could be useful in this particular situation are... Oh, sorry, someone's cursing outside my window. Oh, I hate it when that happens.
My stab's pretty cool. I've never seen that before. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, it's pretty good, cause like, I mean, granted the 6 mana is kind of difficult to get up to, but with the suspend ability on Mind Stab, you actually have the option to like play it early,
yeah.
And you can kind of prepare for when you're going to attack.
Well, yeah, like, just, yeah, that's good.
Because, like, you know, because, like, you have, like, four turns for it to suspend, so once it gets to the point where it has, like, one suspend counter on it left, that's when you start to fill the board up with, like, creatures you intend to attack with. And then when it finally comes in off of the suspend, you can use it to, you know, if there's a particular opponent you knew you were going to attack, you can go right ahead and suspend something off of their thing. You get the counter off, get rid of their hand. Now, you know, they don't have any more combat tricks from their hand, and whatever's on the board is what they have. So as long as no one else interferes in this particular exchange, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I'm actually gonna start playing Mindstab in a few decks. One thing though is like, what the fuck is going on with that picture? Like,
that's from when they had the Time Spiral set. And the storyline for Time Spiral was basically time was being altered and creatures and abilities were all kind of caught in between one time and another.
Yeah, so look up Mindstab Thrall.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, it looks a lot like a Mindstab Thrall. Is that the thing? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically what's happening in the artwork is like on one side of the blue frame, there's like an art of him being stabbed in the head. And then on the other side in the brown frame, it's his hand just reaching past the time-space continuum to hit him.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, once I realized it was a Mindstab Thrall, that explained a lot, because, like, a big part of it was, like, why is it all, like, flayed around? And then I was thinking, oh, yeah, Mindstab Thrall is basically just a bunch of hands, like, sewn together with a head, right?
As long as you're not looking at the Richard Kane Ferguson version.
Right.
It's a freaking Fallen Empires card, so it's yards.
So gross. Oh, that card's so disgusting. Jesus Christ. Like, what the hell?
Okay, so, in other good forms of, like, sorceries, or this particular usage, are things that make other creatures smaller. Things like, Marsh Casualties, maybe even, like, a Black Sun Zenith. Because they're good in using against other people who happen to have a field full of small creatures. If you happen to have even like a good 2/2 and you're playing against a tokens deck, you could potentially wipe out their entire board by giving all creatures -1. Or you could use like a Marsh Casualty, the creature's target player gets -1 at the end of the turn. And if you kick it, then creature's target player gets -2 instead. And the good thing about having a card like that is you can actually pinpoint the enemy you want to take out without pissing other people at the table off, clearing the way for you to be able to go after them.
Actually, while you're mentioning sweepers, there was actually a few cool sweepers that I would use, depending on what deck it is. For instance, you know, we have cards like Mass Calcifier, which is amazing if you're playing, like, mono-white, you know? Also, All's Dust is really good in, like, an artifact creature type deck. You know, you usually kill almost all the defending defending creatures with spells like this. Also, Austere Command is really good. Especially if you, like, if your opponent has a lot of tokens or, like, small creatures to block with, and you can just, like, wipe out all the small things and maybe enchantments or whatever, and then, you know, pound face with some angels or demons or whatever. So, like, that's kind of what I was thinking when it came to sorcery speed, artillery, like, huge hulking things that you want to use to your advantage.
Christian, you have any ideas for the sorcery section of this part?
My favorite one is probably Sleep. Just cause, you know, same thing, same as Giga Drowse, essentially. You're just, opening them wide up. Yeah, you know, for penetration and whatnot. I swear I haven't picked these cards cause I'm tired, I swear. other sorceries that I'm big on are, I've always liked those cards that, you know, you cast in post-combat. The ones that kill things that have been dealt damage. Usually bad removal like that's from the Kamigawa block. But they've always had a special place in my heart.
Those are out pretty good. Another thing that's also good for artillery is like, if you have permanence on the board, that's great. If you have some good cards in your hand to use, that's pretty good. Another thing that's also useful in the artillery section is cards that are in your graveyard. Things like Think Twice. because you could use it to attempt to try to refill your hand a little bit. You can flash it back. It's not going to cost you a card from your hand. You get to draw an extra card and potentially enter a good removal spell or something that might help you out. Other cards that are good from the graveyard are things that have abilities that activate from the graveyard, like Genesis or Brawn, because they can give you a chance to, like I said, get extra value out of the various things that you have on the board. One of my favorite things about, like, you know, Brawn is because it gives all your creatures trample, and all you really need is a Forest, and if you're able to play Brawn, you're playing Forestes. Forestes. Forest High. However you want to glorify that thing. If there's any particular cards in the graveyard you guys want to actually see in there to help, you know, get some extra damage in while you're out there?
Sure. Actually, one of the cards that I've been liking recently is Rolling Tumbler, from Innistrad. It's a two colorless red sorcery that deals two damage to each creature without flying. But the cool thing is it has a flashback for four colorless and two red. So this is a card that, like, you can, if you have enough mana, you can actually cast it and then flash it back to do enough damage to, like, a lot of ground troops and get in there. There's a lot of creatures that only have two power. There's a lot of creatures that only have two toughness, and you can just wipe them clear. You know, get rid of all those tokens, get rid of all those creatures that are holding you back, and just swing for a lot with your big dragons or whatever.
Hell yeah, big dragons.
Although big dragons fly, so that doesn't make sense. Anyways, I like cards like that a lot. Also, you know, Devil's Play is very similar. You can play that from the graveyard, you know, for a pretty good price. You know, three red and X is pretty good for a red spell that gets to play twice. So that's what I think of first, is the red flashback cards that are just really, really good.
I like pretty much any incarnation that needs to be in your yard to be awesome. I'm a big fan of even Anger, which I know some people aren't the biggest fans of Anger. I imagine you love Anger. More attacking? Of course. I really like Dread, because it allows you to open yourself up a bit more. Because in this format, we love our creatures, and we never want to see them die. So when somebody has a Dread out, I'm really tentative about attacking. Even though they're going to get the damage in, I don't want to blow up my dude.
Yeah, Dread's pretty good. He's the step above the other incarnations, though. That's more like Vigor and stuff like that, right? Yeah. But that's a really good effect. Like, it's crazy when, like, your creatures die from that. What's the other one? No Mercy, I think that's what, right?
Dread needs to be out. Like, even our new guy, Micaeus.
Yeah.
Any effect like that is just so... Like, it's not in the real, it's not really that preventative, but it's such a psychological blow that it can keep people from attacking you.
Yeah, especially if your general is a human, then Micaeus is, like, just backbreaking almost. Like, if you're planning to get in there with, like, Rafik and Micaeus is out, you're like, oh, I hope I can do enough damage in one hit.
Probably can, freaking Rafik.
Well, actually, Rafik would die from the first double strike, too, so he wouldn't have to do Rafik. All the damage. Stupid Rafik.
If you were running Zedru, if someone was trying to do a Voltron plane, would you donate them a Kira to slow them down?
Why would you not keep your Kira, though, you know?
Like, because it's funny, because then they can't equip the first thing.
That's true.
Akira.
Well, Kira, Great Glass Spinner.
Yeah. Like, semi-shroud type deal, so it wouldn't make it so you have to equip twice. That just seems obnoxious.
Yeah. They're obnoxious for running Voltron.
I see.
I've seen Voltron Gaddock Teague run at me. Now that was bullcrap.
I plan on building a Gaddock Teague stacks deck, but not a Voltron. That would be weird.
There's just, like, Gaddock Teague is just... I was surprised I didn't mention him on my hated commanders.
Well, we can get there.
Okay, guys. Now that we've gotten a chance to go over this with the artillery section, one of the key things you have to remember is that every zone in this game is of use to you. There's going to be exile zones where you have cards that might be suspended, the graveyard, the field, your hand, Maybe it is even a card in your library that might actually have some type of effect that you're looking for. Maybe you can tutor it up, draw it, find a way to get to it. But one of the best things to remember about artillery is that this is the moment that you actually have a chance to sit down and actually think out what you want to do and how this match should play out for you. You get the most control in this actual position of the game. Most of the time, the game is going to be in other people's turns, and you don't really get a chance to do anything as far as attacking, and you're kind of stuck sitting around waiting for people to decide what they're going to do. But once it actually comes around to you, use your time. Use your knowledge of what you have and try to do what you can to use that knowledge to become a better player and actually get out there and get yourself some wins and some victories.
We're going to take a look at the enemy color generals that were given to us in the Commander box sets. And we're going to take a look at them, and we're going to see how well they contributed to the rather, most of the enemy colored general choices were already really limited. And we're going to see how well they added to those anemic amount of choices that we had. So I'm going to start off, and I'm going to read Vassandra, Battle Seraph. She's the Boros one, red-white. She's 3 red-white, a 4/4 flying angel. Players can't cast spells during combat. Target creature attacks this turn if able, and you pay a red to do that. While Boros doesn't have, like, the best guys, I feel that when they printed Fabio, that Boros really had all they ever really needed. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't really like Vassandra very much at all. The ability to, or the whole players can't cast spells thing during their combat, like, I just don't understand it. Like it prevents things, but, I mean, in Boros colors, it prevents mostly your own tech. Like, something like Condemn, which is a great white card, absolutely can't be played. You know, white has to have probably the most cards that say that only target things that are attacking or defending. And red is also, you know, the other best cards come out during combat to as removal. So, like, I just don't understand why Boros would want a card like this. That seems like something that would be, green-blue, maybe. And obviously green-blue got something much better than this.
Yeah, like, if you throw Sunforger on Vassandra, does, like, a time-space vortex just open up?
Yeah, it would be pointless. You couldn't cast that spell during the combat, you know? And she doesn't shut off abilities, either. And, like, I'm thinking about it, and it's like, white-red has probably the least amount of abilities to use during combat, whereas a lot of other colors, like, you know, something like a Psychotog can be used during combat. So, like, just, like, why? You know, it hurts Boros more than anything else. All the other colors are just like, fine, I won't cast spells. I'll just use my abilities, you know? And it's just kind of like, oh, Sandra's horrible. However, I do like the art a lot. I think it's pretty good art. It's just too bad that she wasn't, like, Tariel, you know? Like,
yeah.
They should have put that art on Tariel, I think, and that would have been really badass.
Yeah, it's pretty boner-inspiring.
Indeed.
Calvin, what do you think of old Vassandy?
But me personally, I'm not really a fan of her either. One of the main things that really annoys me about her is her ability where she pretty much tells you right off the bat that players cannot cast spells during combat. Now, Cassidy reads basically talking about how, you know, red and white have a tendency to use, like, spells during combat. But the thing that gets to me about it is that it's players can't cast spells. That includes you, which means when someone's attacking you and you're playing red and white, you can't use your red instances that burn creatures off. You can't use your white instances that give your creatures instant pumps or maybe even, like, prevents damage. She, like, literally makes her own team worse just by being there. And the worst part is she even has an ability that would force a player to attack you. well, not even attack you, but like force a player to tap a creature to attack, then if you're open, then chances are they're coming at you. It's just, she just seems real counterproductive for what her colors are supposed to be.
We look at the other Boros generals. I mean, you mentioned Fabio, Christian, but we also have Brian Stoutarm, who is a really, really good general. And like, why would you ever use Bassandra over Brian Stoutarm? Like, it wouldn't even be like a matter of flavor or anything, because it's just like, why? And, also, if you want to do an angel, you could just do, Razia, you know, the Boros, angel. She's much better. So like, I just don't see the place for Bassandra anywhere.
And you also have, Argus Koss?
Yeah, there you go.
No, Argus Koss is not good. Just because you beat us with him does not mean he is good.
No, but I'm saying he's better than she is.
I mean,
cause one, he's telling all your red creatures that they're going to get bigger for attacking. He's telling all your white creatures that they're going to be able to deal with extra combat damage for attacking.
Okay, yeah, I'll give Argus is better than Bassandra.
and he leaves it open so you can actually be able to pump your creatures even more or potentially give them other things to do.
Okay, I did just think of something you could do with her. You could put her in a Zedru deck and give it to someone else.
Ah.
it came in the Kalia deck, which, you know, you never want to play in Kalia, but I think we could get away with putting that in Zedru. So maybe there is a place for her, definitely not as a general.
Yeah, the place for her is a card in your deck that you're intentionally trying to give away.
Seems good.
So let's do a quick poll real quick. Is that what you really want to be doing in your colors?
Yes.
A card you don't want in your aggressive deck?
That's half my decks anyway, card deck. All right, so this one's getting the old PU. Calvin, how about you read one off for us?
All right. I'm going to go right ahead and I'm going to pick Nim, the Pain Artist. It's a blue and a red. It's a 1/1 Vadalkin Wizard. And it has X, blue, red, tap. And Nim, the Pain Artist, deals X damage to target creature. And that creature's controller draws X cards. I think that she actually adds a little bit to her colors due to the fact that the other options that are in blue and red are either cards that get you punched in the face or cards that you get laughed out the room for. Because, really, like, what's her real competition in this color? It's Nimmizzet. Okay, you have your Nimmizzet that people sees it, they know you're going to be trying to play some type of infinite combo that's going to burn the whole table off or kill off one guy, but because you're drawing cards, he's going to burn them out. Chances are, punch in the face. You have, Jahara? And she's an automatic punch in the face. We've discussed her before. And then there's, Timber and, what's that other?
Tabor and Lumia, just...
Well, what's that other one? The one with the two people on it that just don't really does shit?
Yeah. Tabor and Lumia, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that one's just like, just no.
Yeah, it's like...
It's sort of cool. Come on.
No pass. No.
I think we went over this already. I feel like we've had this conversation. But
yeah, we talked about this one.
Charisma and Basilisk Collar all day.
That's what I'm saying, but Nim actually adds something to this particular color combination, in my opinion, because... It's a general that you can go right ahead, has a cheap mana cost. It doesn't really scare too many players. I mean, you know, it does come in with its own personal tacked on removal with the downside of your opponent drawing that many cards. But, you know, if you're using her, I'm pretty sure you're going to find a way to try to use that to your advantage. And you can always, you know, tag team her up with like a stuffy doll and a consecrated sphinx.
Yeah.
That way, you know, burn them off. They take the damage from the stuffy. You draw some cards, or you could just burn one of their creatures, and the Sphinx sees them drawing X cards, and then you get to draw whatever.
Yeah, I really, really like Nin a lot. It's one of my favorite cards, actually, from the Commander set. I like it, too, when you can, in your own decks, you can just run stuff with a lot of toughness, like a big Kraken, you know, in blue, or maybe like a Inferno Titan, just off the top of my head. And you can deal a little bit of damage to them to draw some cards before the end of the turn, you know? Because you can be relatively sure that no one's going to, like, lightning bolt in response, you know? Like I guess if that happens, that sucks, but, you know, there's always another big creature you can start doing some pain to. The one thing that I find unfortunate about Nin is that she doesn't have any black in her color identity. Because I would want to make, like, a torture-type deck with her just because, you know, I think her flavor text kind of screams for it and, you know, just the flavor in general. But, you know, Torture is black, and all the torture type cards are black, so you can't really do that unless you like put her in a deck that's Grixis or something.
Yeah,
that's my main issue. I definitely also like running her in other decks. Like I put her in my Ruhan deck. You know that guy's a 7/7. You can usually do 2 or 3 damage to him and never have to worry about him dying. You know, so I think Nin's a great card all around, and I really like that card.
Yeah, as far as when it comes to what it brings to that color combination, I think Nin is the best one. Because it's giving you a playable commander that isn't going to get you murdered for playing them. And it's not really adding anything unique to the color combination, because it's drawing cards like Niv-Mizzet will for you too. But I feel the way it does it is really balanced out and really good.
And one other side note I actually want to try to add on to Nin is the fact that you can deal more damage to a creature than it needs to take. And since you're in red and blue, chances are you're going to have a creature that's going to die at the end of the turn anyway, that's got like a 7/1 that's going to sacrifice itself. So you can always like play it, swing with it. If it is going to die, you can always tap her, pay X mana, hit it, it'll die, and you get to draw some extra cards off of it. And even if it does get a chance to actually get in there 4/7 before the end of turn, you can always you can burn it off and draw extra cards off of it too, so.
Yeah, that's...
She has, like, you know, a little bit of extra value to the actual color she's in.
And the image of her, like, torturing a ball of lightning is just kind of really... It's making me laugh. Yeah, that's a great idea. I didn't even really think of that, but that's pretty cool.
So, Christian, which one of these cards would you actually want to pick up and talk about at the moment?
Well, I'm gonna let Cassidy do one.
Oh yeah, it's my turn now. But let's say okay, so we're thumbs up with we're thumbs up on Nin though, right guys?
Yeah, we're thumbs up on Nin.
Okay.
As opposed to Basandi.
Yeah.
Alright. I'll go ahead and do Skullbriar then, because I actually have pretty strong feelings about this douchebag. Now Skullbriar, the Walking Grave, is a black green legendary creature zombie elemental with haste. He's 1/1 and has attacks whenever Skullbriar the Walking Grave deals combat damage to a player, put a +1/+1 counter on. Now counters remain on Skullbriar as it moves to any other any zone other than a player's hand or library. So basically the idea is that this guy's going to come out fast, attack, get some bonuses, but then when he dies he won't be a 1/1 when he comes back out as a general. First thing I thought when I saw this guy was, I play him, somebody uses Instill Infection, gives it a -1/-1 counter, and I can't play him for the rest of the freaking game unless I get something like a Guy's Anthem in play to boost him up immediately. Because that 1-1/-1 counter is going to stick with him when he goes to the general zone.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Man, that's awful.
Now, you know, it's not just about whether the card is good. We're asking kind of what it brings to the color pie. Now, green-black actually has had a lot of options for generals over the years. For instance, we have Vadi Eldal, who's been around for a long time, and he's pretty good. I would say Vadi is much better than Skullbriar. We had Glissa recently as well, and Glissa is one of those generals that you can build around really hard and make broken deck, or you can just throw a bunch of good creatures in with her and beat some face, because she is pretty much one of the best creatures just pound for pound, you know. First strike and death touch at the same time makes it so that there's very few creatures that she can't just, like, beat the crap out of, you know. So, you know, just those two alone. Then we have Savra, you know, we have Nath of Guiltleaf, who makes some really good decks, really good combos, you know, and you can play elves with. So, like, there's all these black-green legends that we can choose from, and Skullbriar is just by far the worst of them. So, as much as I dislike,
can,
go ahead.
I can think of one that I would play Skullbriar over Iname as one.
Okay, but that thing costs like 12 to cast. So, okay, fair. So there is one legend.
Not really too sure about this. I'm not a judge. I don't really know exactly how layering works. But I have a quick question about how Skullbriar the Walking Grave might interact with the new Macias. So if Skullbriar does have a -1/-1 counter on him, correct?
Yeah.
And you had Macias out. Skullbriar would get Undying, right?
Yeah.
So he would die and go to the graveyard. The Undying would bring him back and put a +1 counter on him, correct?
Yeah.
Would the +1 counter and the -1 counter negate each other in time for him to be able to actually hit the graveyard and come back as a 1-1?
Pretty much any time state-based actions are checked is when those two will blow each other up.
Okay. Yeah.
So he would come back as a 1-1, and then if he died again, you could give him the +1/+1 from the Undying. And then you could send him back to the command zone from there if you like. But that's like a lot of dirtling around, and you need 6 mana already to play Macias. So.
Well, you know, it's just something that I was thinking of. Like, you know, because, you know, with Macias being like mono black, you could easily put him in here as like a, let's just say like as more of a counter to the -1 counters. Like, you know, in case something does come up and you know somebody puts a -1 counter on him, you know you have a way to potentially get him back at least. Because the base actions keep him around.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that if you're seeing Macias right now and Green's out there, the Triskelion's probably been tooth and nailed out with him, so the game's over.
Yeah. As much as I hate Bessandra, the Battle Seraph, I think that Skullbriar is worse. So I would actually vote this guy as the worst of the five. Bessandra has a close second, because at least Bessandra is kind of, like, functional. But I just think Skullbriar is just so obnoxious in his design.
Yeah, Skullbriar can be okay 1-on-1, but it means that they weren't ready for him, because he just jumps out on turn 1 and manages to win. But, yeah, I didn't even think of the fact that Bessandra can at least not be rendered unplayable.
Right.
So Bessandra's got that leg up on Skullbriar. I still kind of like him, just because he's a crappy aggro general. So I like, well, I don't even know if crappy is the right word, but if you're in a play group where nobody seems to have -1/-1 counters to deal out, he becomes infinitely better.
Yeah.
I'm still gonna, I'm gonna give him the old, I'm gonna give him, the no.
Well, me personally, if I'm looking at Skullbriar, yeah, the -1/-1 counter thing can be a bitch to deal with. But I do really like the fact that he's, like, just 2 mana and a haste and comes in and he swings. And when he deals combat damage, he gets, like, a +1. So he kind of can try to avoid those -1s. At least until someone gets a Black Sun Zenith. I'm going to say Dark Sun.
Just think of this. You attack with Skullbriar. They block with, like, a Bird of Paradise. And then turn 2, they play Contagion Clasp. And then you never get a creature. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of ways that, like, if Skullbriar doesn't get the bonus right away, then you're just screwed. So, like, I just can't stand that guy. God, he's so annoying.
Yeah.
He's pretty swingy.
He's not, and the colors he's in don't really give, like, enchantments that pump toughness in attack either.
Yeah, there's, like, Gaia's Anthem, which is, like, that's, like, the time-shifted one that they gave to White, right?
Yeah, but that's, like, it, though, isn't it? I mean, there's no, like, Crusade for Black that I can think of outside of,
Badman. Yeah.
Okay. So, still, it's not really worth it. Yeah, you know what? You guys convinced me. I'm gonna have to go dump down on a GoPro too. Like, I'm sitting here trying to think of how to make them work, but now this ain't happening.
Okay, so, I guess I'll, so I've got a choice of 2 here. One that I've mentioned is one of my most hated cards, so I'm going to pick the other one. We're going to go with Vishkal Blood Arbiter. He's the Orzhov one, so he's 4 white, 2 black. For a 5/5 flying lifelink, so that's all right there. Sack a creature, put X +1/+1 counters on Vishkal, where X is the sacrifice creature's power. Remove all +1/+1 counters from Vishkal. Target creature gets -1/-1 till end of turn for each +1/+1 counter removed this way. I really, like, when I start reading them, I just yawn. Black-white is a color combination that I was that I really like, but I just find every general in it so boring. And this did not help out with that at all. I'd run him over Selenia. I'll say that. And I'd probably actually run him over Taysa or Ghost Council, because he doesn't need to be so combo-rific, because he can go in for the beats, so he doesn't have that going for him. But I don't know, he's just not interesting to me. What do you guys think?
Well, one of the things I actually find kind of interesting about him is the fact that you can use him for like a permanent sac outlet. Like if you have creatures on board that you know are going to die anyway, you can always just sacrifice them all to him to pump him up a bit. You could always use he goes pretty well with like a bunch of creatures on board in the Black Sun Zenith, because you know like your creatures are probably going to get weaker and die. So you could sack them off, he'll get the +1 counters, Black Sun Zenix 4X. He'll lose all of his +1 counters, but at least he doesn't go down past his original 5/5 and stays. Where everything else basically just, you know, kind of just gets minus whatever and just dies. Granted, that does seem like a really huge, large amount of text just to be able to say, you know, this guy gets bigger. And the other thing I don't like about him is the remove all the +1 counters from him to deal deal -1/-1 to a target creature. Like if it was just remove X +1 counters, I would like it better, because you'd have the option to try like maybe machine gun off like a small army, or maybe like, you know, lower one guy, lower another guy while like during the middle of combat to try to get more creatures in. But with the flying and lifelink, you know, he does actually pay off if you just use him as if you forget the second ability of to remove all the +1 counters and just use him as like lifelink, sacrifice a creature and gets bigger. He can do some pretty decent general damage on his own. Cause he's, you know, he's already a 5/5 and you sacrifice like a, I don't know. Oh, we'll go with, Lord of the Pit. You know, now that I'm thinking about it. You know, Lord of the Pit's not going to eat him. He's going to eat the Lord. And he's going to be like, what, 5/7 +1 counter, so he's like, he's a 12/12 flying lifelinker.
Yeah, that's two turns. Two turn clock there, yeah.
Yeah, of course, you're casting him on like turn 9.
That's my big issue with Vishkal, though, is that he's 7 to cast, you know. To me, he's more of a supporting character. He's like great coming down later in the game. He's a really good, like, you know, for a 7 drop in black white, he's probably one of the better ones, you know what I mean? He's up there with Runescar Demon and usefulness in, when just throwing him in decks. As a general, I don't know. You mentioned Selenia. Actually, Selenia is kind of cool as a general because you can use goofy things like, what's that thing? Soul Conduit to kill someone with all the activations. Here, you can have my 2 life after I activate this 300 times. Anyways, I think Vishkal is a pretty sweet creature in general, especially out of the 5 that we're talking about. I think he's the most, like, mostly in the spirit of EDH, you know, just
yeah,
this big
the
guy. Yeah, and, you know, I think he's kind of cool, and, you know, just kind of a cool card in general. He does a lot. He's not fucking Bassandra, and he's not Skullbriar, so you have to give that to him. And I think he's on par with the way Nin works, you know, just kind of cool, unique ability on a nice card. I don't like the art, though. I think, like, when you mention how boring he is, I think that's kind of part of it. Like, sure, he's an arbiter, I get it, but, like, it's just such a boring picture, and he's up in the corner, sitting there like, what the hell, yeah. You know?
Is he doing his taxes?
Right, exactly. Like, I'm busy. Although, he does require a little bit of math to figure out what you want to do with him, so. Yeah, like you mentioned, it's not hard to turn him into a huge beater. So, like, you can't go wrong if you bought the product and decided to go with him as a general. I mean, I can't fault you at all.
I am for Elbrus. I want to run it in black, white, white because white has all the best equipment spells, and black because the other side's black, and I refuse to put it in a deck that doesn't have black in it. So I'm thinking that Vishkal is probably the guy I'd use in that, just because out of the black-white ones, that's the one that I would rather use for hidden.
Yeah, actually, that'd be pretty fun, like Vishkal with Elbrus in there. Like, I mean, you're trying to hit 7 as the curve anyway, so why not, right?
Yeah. Okay, well, we've saved the granddaddy of them all here for you, Calvin. How about you take us down old Edric Lane?
Alrighty. So, The last of these five here is Edric, Spymaster of Fresh. He's a one colorless, green, blue, legendary elf rogue 2/2. Whenever a creature deals combat damage to one of your opponents, its controller may draw a card. We've gone into a pretty decent amount of discussion about how Edric is currently being used a lot when we were going over Douchebag Legends on our Hater Raid section. If you haven't heard of it, it's episodes, what was it, 7, right?
Yep.
It was the last one we did?
Yeah, with Passion. Yep, last week. Mm-hmm.
Yep, so go back, episode 7. Listen, you can get a chance to hear how we kind of don't really like this guy. But what we're discussing right now is not how we feel about him, but what he's done for his colors. And one of the things I have to say that he has done for his colors is, yes, he is an effective legendary general, in my opinion. I mean, he was going up against Momir Vig, for Christ's sakes, and currently is one of the more played blue-green legends. The only other real competition he would have had would have been Experimental Kraj, right?
Yeah, and that's not competition at all.
Well, you can make pretty good combo decks with Kraj. Yeah. Calvin has an excellent combo deck that he wrote about. I've actually, like, made that deck and played that one, so I can vouch for that deck being awesome.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, Kraj is pretty cool. You know, Kraj and Momir Vig pretty much had those two color, had the blue and green, you know, fairly decent. Because, you know, Kraj, he's more of the, if you're into combos or, you know, longer games, you can do a whole bunch of different things with them. And with Momir Vig, you know, if you're into tutoring and figuring out a way to just beat face early by stealing stuff and whatever, you can go right ahead and do your thing with him. Edris, on the other hand, basically is the one, adds something to this color combination because he makes combat something that actually wants to happen. I mean, the other two are more of the you're doing stuff. Edric promotes other people doing stuff. I mean, granted, yeah, you could get the bonus of drawing a card by using your creatures to attack, but, you know, he works in a nice way to get people to not want to attack you. He makes people want to attack other players so they can draw the card. Or cards, depending on how many creatures and points of damage have been dealt out to their opponents. So, I would say that he has added a fairly decent section to his thing, even though it is kind of on the really played down, annoying side at the moment.
Yeah, I like I mentioned last week, I think Edric is a really cool card. Like, he's a rogue. I love my rogues. And, I like the idea that he's kind of like, he has the idea that, or just look at his text, you know, I'm not at liberty to reveal my sources, but I can assure you the price on your head is high. You know, it's very generic. He's not telling you who's after you. He's just telling you to watch your ass. And that's kind of what I like about him. You know, he's kind of like this guy in the shadows. You know, he's a spy master. I also like the fact that it makes, you know, makes cards like Skimp Sprites really good, and you can make really fun decks. And you know, blue-green... Blue-green isn't my favorite color pie. You know, I don't really like the combination, but all the generals have something cool and different to offer, and the fact that Edric offers something completely different at the same time, you know, it kind of blows my mind a little bit how cool this guy is for the format. You know, unfortunately, he does get overplayed, and apparently he's like the god card in European singles or whatever, but I'm always going to like this guy. I really like him a lot.
He makes Cloud of Fairies a pretty good card.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I will say, I mean, not that Blue-Green needed this kind of a shot in the arm, but he definitely gave Blue-Green a shot in the arm. I think one thing he does do is he gets players to play a little better, because they'll be looking for advantageous attacks more often, and so you'll actually get people to attack more. They won't be attacking you. But games can run a little shorter if somebody's a bit defenseless. Not everyone's going to be sitting behind their forts if they can draw cards.
That's a good point. Most people usually, like, think of him as, like, a propaganda effect where you're protected, but at the same time, he does encourage, like, you know, he encourages you to attack with Ruffalos if you're not going to use that mana, you know what I mean? And make your creatures vulnerable and stuff. So that's a good point. I've never really even thought about that.
Okay, so we've gone over. I think we can pretty much say that Edric is, you know, the bee's knees, if you're that kind of bee's knees fellow. Vishkal and Nin, they fill their roles pretty well. And
Bissandra and Skullbriar are on the bottoms, fighting over scraps.
Yeah, Bissandra and Skullbriar can go ask themselves. But we had a good old time, and I hope you guys did too. Any comments of your own? Do you think that maybe things shake out a little differently? Some secret tech that went over our heads, because our heads are very low to the ground? Email us at offcolorcast@gmail.com, and we'll be sure to talk it over with you. Okay, lipstick wearers, it's time to say goodbye after another beautiful episode of Off Color, Episode 8. I'm Chris. If you want to hit me up, get me on Twitter at Christian Renault, or just email the show at offcolorcast. offcolorcast@gmail.com. Let's see. Let's end with Calvin tonight. So, Cassidy, how about you say goodbye?
All right. Goodbye, everyone. If you want to reach me, you can catch me at Rider of Wrong on Twitter. You can also email me at csilver85@gmail.com, or you can just catch me at the offcolorcast. Gmail as well. I also have a website, www.youcanthandlethenath.com. I'm so bad at updating it lately, seriously, but it does exist, and I still do kind of think about it, and things will be added eventually. So, yeah. Good night, everyone.
Okay, Calvin, take us home.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to another long episode of Off Color Cast. If you're trying to find me, I'm not really that difficult to find. In fact, I'm probably one of the easiest people to locate. Because you know what? I'm on Twitter, Captain Red Zone. I'm on Facebook. You can find me at freetoface.com. I have a tendency to have a Gmail account that I look at frequently, which is captainredzone@gmail.com. So, if you ever have an issue, ever have a problem, something you do decide you want to discuss against me, want, you know, come at my face, tell me something horrible about myself, I'm open to this. I've got no problem with you cursing me out, because chances are, I'm not really going to give a shit. But, you know, if you've got some, you know, constructive criticism you want to throw my way about something that we've discussed, you can go right ahead and do that, too.
All right. See you guys later.
Yep. See ya.
And that's it. We're out.